Hello, namaste and welcome, and Om Shanti to everyone. Over the past 2 months or so, we have been talking to each other on Facebook and YouTube and other platforms. This is a special presentation by the Brahma Kumaris team to specially reach out to our friends during challenging times such as these. In the last 4 or 5 months, the world has seen unprecedented change, and to deal with these changes, it is important for us to bring about a change in our approach about everything. To start with our very own approach of life, how do we look at it? So these change in perspectives are not so easy, and many people are finding it challenging to deal with these changes. And these are the times where spirituality comes handy, where it allows you to bring about a change in yourself with any ease. And over the last 2 months, senior Raja Yoga faculties and meditation teachers from the Brahma Kumaris have been reaching out to you, and every day they've been speaking to you. If you have a question, if you would want to ask for some guidance, emotional support, or spiritual wisdom, all of that is available here. And to all of our friends who have joined us in today, I would like to tell you that today we also have a Master of Meditation who has joined in. And if you would want to ask questions, you can always ask your questions in the comment section of this video, either on Facebook or YouTube, and we'll pick up those comments and we'll read out your questions to our faculty today, and they will give us an answer for your question. And if you are not feeling like asking a question, if you just want to share how you're feeling today, or maybe if you just want to give us a shout out, you can always do that in the comment section, and you can see that in the video time and again whenever this video would show it too. Today we have a master of meditation who has practiced meditation for several decades. He has been a teacher and student of Raja Yoga meditation. And the master of meditation today is Brother Neville, who is joining us all the way from United Kingdom. Neville, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Srini Devai. It's great to be with you and with the viewers.
Thank you. One of the first questions that comes to everybody, and many people have been asking these questions in different ways, in different formats, is how do we deal with change? The thing is, sometimes when we are prepared for changes, then it becomes easier. But for most of us, this change caught us unaware. Many of us did not know if this kind of situation would come, and we were not even prepared if these situations were supposed to come. We would not know what would be our response to it. So how do you see that when situations like this arise where we are not prepared or when we have not foreseen an event, what should be a common response that as a meditator, as a person who has practiced spirituality for long, what kind of response does this person evoke in himself or herself compared to other people?
Well, two things come to mind. One is there's benefit in everything. The longer I've been on this journey of self-realization with the Brahma Kumaris, the more I've realized that when I resist something, actually, if I look back a bit later and see it in the longer term, there was always some benefit hidden within what I was previously resisting. That's one of the big learnings that I've had. The other is that essentially, and in a sense, this is also part of the learning, it's usually the ego that is resisting change. And by that, I mean, I've learned through my spiritual journey that there's kind of two aspects of ourselves. There's the limited self, which is a construct of this particular life, this incarnation. You know, we build up in our brains circuitry that give us a sense of who we are, and we need that. The psychologists tell us we need some sort of ego structure, a healthy ego structure with which to face life. We're not just amorphous blobs of energy. I have to think I'm male, I'm English, I'm a journalist, I'm a family man. All of these things are fine, but when the ego becomes over-identified with those things, then it hurts when there is change. So two things. One, benefit in everything. Two, the ego is usually the root of the resistance to change.
The thing that you mentioned is, of course, spirituality helps many people, and many people have started discovering that over the past few days. And most of our friends here in India, especially.
I'm sorry, I've lost your sound. You're rather distant.
Is it better now?
Yes, that's fine, thanks.
Yeah, sorry. Over the past few months, we have noticed that there is a huge surge in the amount of online searches for people looking for positivity, people looking for meditation, people looking for healthier lifestyles. So these searches were seen. There was an increase in these searches as well. And there is also an increase in the amount of people who have asked the Brahma Kumaris for doing online meditation courses, and which we have been doing for several past weeks now. Do you really think that just because a person takes up spirituality or moves to a positive lifestyle or chooses to do something positive about his life or her life, or because he is facing a challenge or an event like this, which is COVID-19 at the moment, or the pandemic, do you think that it would be a long-term change in the life, or do people have to really do something to sustain that change as a long-term thing?
It differs very much. Sometimes when we are really hurting and then something comes along that lifts us out of that hurt, we never forget it. You know, it's commonly said that with the near-death experience, when people have died clinically, but then with the advances in resuscitation techniques, they've come back from a brush with death, and quite commonly they have an experience of the deeper self, you know, the self that continues after death, the self that is not associated and identified with the brain and what the brain has learned, but that deeper transcendent self. And when we tasted that, actually, that leads to really sometimes very powerful and lasting change right for the rest of our lives. But it doesn't always come in such a sort of aha moment. Sometimes you have to really work at it. In my own case, I was pushing myself very hard in a kind of ego-driven way in my newspaper work, and it brought me close to a health breakdown. And then I felt this wonderful sense of relief when I learned, and I was told it as an idea, which I couldn't really understand, but somehow deep inside I resonated with it, that I was this eternal being whose real nature was loving and peaceful, and that the stress that I was experiencing had come from being so caught up with the ego and its aims and ambitions and so forth. And that was a huge relief to me. And when I started practicing this kind of way of thinking, that underneath everything there was this beautiful positive being, that made an immediate difference. When I was fortunate that, in a way like this lockdown has done, I actually left my job for about 2 years to write a book, the first one I wrote. And when I went back into full-time newspaper work, there was already a big change, because I'd learned how to start to think of myself and feel about myself in a more positive way. My relationships in the office were better. My ability to ask good, humane, probing questions of the subjects of the stories I was doing was better. And my family relationships improved. So there are immediate changes that bring benefit immediately, especially if you really feel the need very strongly. But if you're just taking it as a little bit of a top up of your battery, if you don't feel too drained, you just feel a bit irritated by current circumstances, well, maybe meditation will just help you get through that irritation, but it won't necessarily lead to lasting change. We do differ enormously in the in the, I would say really in at the amount of need that we have for these kind of practices.
I think when you were saying that there is this need, and many people have felt this need to bring about a change inside, some of our friends have already started asking questions. I would like to take those questions right to you. One of our friends asks us this question. Her name is Lisa, and Lisa has joined us on Facebook, and she asks, please give us tips on how to make meditation strong. And since you understand, I believe, Neville, many of our friends are new to meditation. Most of people are looking forward to powerful experiences during meditation. And I think Lisa asks the same thing, that how should she make her meditation much stronger?
It's, I would say it's really incredibly simple. It's based on experiencing that love and peace are intrinsic to every human being's nature. But you have to sort of accept that. You have to come right into the present moment, because in the now, when you really come right into the present, it means that you're focused and you're not thinking about the past and you're not worrying about the future. When you're using your brain to worry about the past, about the future, about hurts, about ambitions, as long as your brain is being used that way, you can't really connect to this dimension of sweet, sustaining, nurturing peace. So the first step is to come right into the present moment and allow yourself to feel that you really are that being of peace and love and power. That when you have practiced this for a while and recharged the battery of your well-being, that power allows you to move through life in a way whereby you're almost like you're meditating all the time. Because instead of approaching situations thinking, what's going on here? How should I feel about it? Is someone out to get me? You know, am I being put down here? Instead of that sort of fear-based approach to life, when you've learned to meditate in this method of, it's known as Raj Yoga, that I learned through the Spiritual University, when you practice that regularly, right from the start, it is allowing you to build up a kind of force inside, not force in the sense of a violence, but an energy inside, that then in your everyday life, your positioning of yourself is more giving instead of fearful about how you might lose something. This is the power of this. It's much more than a technique in Raj Yoga. It's really a big change in your attitude towards who you are. And an important part of that, which for me was, I worked as a science correspondent in the newspapers over here for many decades. And so my background was actually thinking in very materialistic ways. And when I met the Sisters of the Brahma Kumaris, I was struck by the beauty of their being, but the ideas didn't really fit my preconceived way of seeing the world. So they spoke about the soul, which is that inner being, and they spoke about God, about a non-physical source, which they say we've all come from. And now I sort of totally accept this. Even science is actually approaching this understanding now. But that we've all come from that source. And so when you deliberately choose to feel peaceful and cheerful and positive, when you make that choice, and it's up to you, you can't be given it from outside. Well, you can actually, if practiced yogis can share it. But, you know, the idea is to be able to make the choice to make it your own rather than to have a dependency on someone else. So you make that choice that I am a being of love and peace and happiness. And when you do that effectively, it's as if you then, you've tuned your mind to that unchanging and unlimited source of those same positive impulses or emotions, almost you could call it. It's like an energy of truth that is out there, and when you connect to that, it charges your battery quite quickly. So that's the essence of this meditation. It's really extraordinarily simple, but it's a knack. You have to catch it, and you have to make effort yourself. Unlike, you know, in the church that I used to go to as a child, people might pray to God. They'd say, please give me this, please help me pass my exams, please help so-and-so get better. That's like asking, but this, in these teachings, it's very interesting difference. It says, look, you have it within you. Just use it. Just recognize it and use it. And to begin with, it may not be so easy, especially as other ideas get in the way. But after a bit, it becomes really very empowering.
So you said that meditation is not really that hard, and you should not be working hard and trying to make it powerful or anything, but just to understand its simplicity.
Yes.
And that simplicity of meditation would bring it to more, that would build strength.
That's right. And just you begin it with a thought of a positive nature, such as, for example, that peace really is my and your innermost nature. That is a reality. That is who I am. When you strip away the worries and the concerns and the hurts that life has dealt us up, I am that peace. It's amazingly simple. There's nothing, you know, you don't have to chant, you don't have to study kind of in-depth things, although some of those things can help you get there, but really ultimately what I've found is it is just so simple. It's a question of accepting that we really are those offspring of God, offspring of that beautiful, beautiful source of truth. All of us, without exception. But of course it doesn't always seem like that, because we've forgotten about that deep transcendent self, and we identify so much with, you know, who we are in terms of the part that we're playing here in the world. And we have to play that well, but the beauty of the meditation practice is that if you really catch hold of this idea, it puts a little space between you and the part that you're playing, and then you find yourself playing that part much better, actually.
True, indeed. Most of us have come to the habit of identifying ourselves with our less than perfect being, and that is where the trouble begins, I believe. And like you rightly pointed out, it is as simple as that, and just for us to understand. Neville, I would take you to the next question. One of our friends, Celine, has joined us on YouTube, and Celine asks this question. Om Shanti, should we change the thoughts that come in or just accept them neutrally? So it's a question again related to meditation, that should we consciously try to change the thoughts that come inside our mind, or should we just accept them with a neutral stand? Celine.
Helen was the name. I didn't catch the name.
Celine.
Yeah. It's very good to be definitely a part of the meditative process is self-observation. Instead of just kind of allowing thoughts to wash you this way and that, actually to be observing them. Because they give you clues about what's going on inside you, much of which is in the subconscious. But when you find space to monitor yourself in the way that you're speaking of and take a look at the thoughts that are coming, that in itself is a good step. The way you respond to what you see depends on the nature of what is going on. One of the things I've learned is that it's really important not to be judgmental of yourself or others, but especially and first and foremost of yourself, not to use force against yourself, not to suppress thoughts that may be coming, not to feel angry with yourself, you know, you fool, or this sort of habit. None of that doesn't help. In fact, it's counterproductive. So if, for example, I see that, I'll take the example of the recent, which you began with, Srinidhi Bhai, of the responses to the virus emergency. And even though I've been practicing these skills of managing my mind for many years, I realized that when the panic was being stoked up over here, sort of every few minutes there would be a new message in the media or from government about the advance of this deadly virus, and a lot of fear was created. And I've seen in the past when this same kind of response has been there, because it sells newspapers, it gets viewers, it makes governments feel important. There are many non-constructive ways whereby people respond in these fear-inducing ways, which are actually disempowering of people. We need facts, but we don't need fear. And I felt quite frustrated, because I've seen it before in previous outbreaks, not this coronavirus, but some previous instances over the years. And I know it's counterproductive, and I know that it was irritating me to see some of these same mistakes being made. And I tried to do letters about it, but sometimes a bandwagon starts rolling, and neither politicians nor journalists nor anyone seems able to step off it until it's run its course. So this was frustrating me, actually, until I realized that through looking at it, through seeing that this was coming up again and again, and it was causing me disturbance. It was meaning that I wasn't in my peace. And I realized that it was because I was feeling a special frustration, because I used to be able to influence these things. I'm now in my getting on for 80, and so I've been away from active newspaper work for some while, but I still hoped that I might have an influence, and that was my mistake. It was really my ego, that old identity of being able to make a difference or try to make a difference, that was what was frustrating me more than anything else. And when I realized that, that sort of made that thought finish. It really did. I felt, no, you're wasting your time and energy by thinking and feeling this way. Just get on with what you can get on with. And I'm doing some other writing in other areas, but I've tried to help a few friends with the perspective that I might hold on what was happening, but otherwise stopped fretting about not being able to influence the course of events. And so when things come up, it's very good not to suppress them, but if you see that they are causing you, they're taking away your peace or your love, they're bringing in fear or worry, then look for the roots of it. That's the way, rather than suppress it. When you're meditating in the short term, it's fine. You may say you just want to sit and experience a few minutes of peace, then thoughts of this kind come in. You can say, look, I'm not going to deal with you now, but you're in the way of my meditation practice. So you can just choose to put those thoughts on one side for a few minutes. They won't go away. You're not suppressing them. You're just telling them, look, I don't need you right now. You sit on one side for a while. And, you know, in the short term, that can help you to stoke up with your meditation practice. But longer term, it's really good to be monitoring what's going on inside you, so that you try and find the roots of these negativities, the things that take away your peace, and gradually deal with that through understanding. Then you start to build up real power to be in life and yet not knocked off your perch by it, you know, not unduly distressed by it. Does Does that make some sense, Céline?
Yes, it does. It does a great sense. And in fact, what it really tells us is meditation is not about forcing your mind to do something, but also being a conscious observer of what your thoughts are, mm-hmm. and probably very gently putting your thoughts aside if something is not important at that very moment. So it is a very good way of managing your thoughts, and I believe that helps a great deal. Thank you so much, Neville. I would go to the next question, and this question comes to us from Facebook, and Ananya asks this question. She says that, can I help my father-in-law by meditation, as he's very unstable-minded and always talking something? No peace at our home after his brain surgery. Can you please suggest? I believe what Ananya means to ask is, after a brain surgery, her father-in-law has been having trouble with unstable mind, and he would constantly be talking about something. So that disturbs, that she feels that there is no peace at home. Mm-hmm. She says that, is there something that you can suggest to help her, Ananya?
Yes, thanks, Ananya. I think acceptance is a good start. One of the things I found that is most gets in the way, it's sort of like when someone else is distressed or disturbed, if I'm resistant to that, then that adds to the problem in the home. But if I can be accepting and understanding, as it sounds as if you are, because you recognize that this is a consequence of the brain surgery, and so your father is disabled by this at the moment, maybe while the healing is taking place. So you've got that acceptance, but still you're wondering, can we do something in the home that will help? And definitely, I think one of the things that helps a lot is what I was touching on earlier with this Raj Yoga meditation, that it connects you to a supreme source, like a spiritual sun. It connects you to a light that is full of power. And that light, you access that light, it's there, but you access it through understanding, but also through, like I said, coming into the present moment, choosing thoughts that connect you to that one, that source. If you can do this, this is actually the best way of helping in the home and helping your father. Because when we connect to the Supreme, it's like we become a light bulb. It's not that you're not the energy, if you like. Your job is to make sure the light bulb is screwed in, and that's yoga. If you screw in the light bulb nice and tight so that your light is strong, inevitably that will help in the home and help in relationships. So it puts the onus on you, rather than thinking that you can ask anything of your father, which you didn't suggest that, but some people sometimes might feel blaming or critical or cross with a relative, but actually we can never really change another. But if we screw in that light bulb of yoga connection ourselves, then the radiance that comes from us does help everybody around, because it's not only a light of, of understanding and acceptance, it's also a vibrational light. It's something that reaches out from us, from the cells in our body, from the brain, from the heart, and it reaches out to others in the home and actually can help quite directly in healing. So it's a very good thing, a very good question that you asked there, and that's the nub of the answer. To connect to your own higher self, and connect the higher self to God. If you don't have an understanding of that inner dimension, as I didn't to begin with, it takes time before you can do that. And in the meantime, the way I used to move forward was by going into gatherings where practiced yogis were vibrating this truth. You know, it's like going into a gathering of light bulbs, and I would absorb from that, and then I would take that back to my home, and that would help me. It's not ultimately, the idea is that you have that shift in your understanding whereby God is real to you, and you understand yourself in that deep way of the inner being, so that you can generate that peace and love and light yourself. I hope that's not too theoretical.
Very beautifully said, Neville.
I hope that means something.
No, no, no. I think, yeah, it does. It does. And it helps a great deal. And for many of us who are new to this idea of meditation and about creating a vibration and how just by our being and just by the way, a different way of how we think, the way in how we look at things, that approach itself changes and contributes in the process of healing. And even though it is a new thing for many of us, but it does make sense. And I believe Ananya will appreciate your answer. And so have many of our friends who have already started writing back feedbacks about what you're saying means so much to them. Our next question comes from Aman. And Aman writes to us from Facebook. And the question is, how does one change one's negative thinking? Are you supposed to challenge your thoughts or just let them be? I find that you just stay in a continuous cycle. Thank you. That is Aman's question. I believe negative thinking, most of the people today feel, is like going in a vicious circle. You go around, around, and around. So the question makes sense to me, which says that how do we really change our negative thinking?
It does take some power, actually. When a negative cycle of thought has taken a grip on you, there's a sort of, it's almost like a feedback mechanism. You know, if you have two microphones too close to each other and you get a feedback and a scream comes out, it can be a bit like that with us as well. That, you know, if we overburden ourselves with worry and negativity, the normal checks and balances within the brain and within the body stop operating, and you can get you can really become very sick. So it's a good question, and something that all of us should be paying attention to, make sure that, especially that we don't overburden ourselves with negativity. Obviously, nobody wants to be negative, but sometimes it feels as if we have no option but to have an emotional response to something that we're not enjoying, something that seems to be distressing. But it's very important not to allow the impact of those negativities to build up beyond the point where it like runs out of control, because that can lead on to, as I say, to severe depression, a kind of pit that you may find it really difficult to get out of. So it's a very, very good that you've got the strength and the good sense to be monitoring your thoughts. As I mentioned to an earlier question, I think it's really such an important thing that we give time to ourselves to look within. What that's actually one of the hidden benefits, I think, of this global sort of shutdown. That even though I think quite a lot of it has some definite harms that have come from it, but one of the really great benefits is that it's prompted us to step off the sort of cycle of endless activity and stress and worry. It does give an opportunity to look within. Especially if you've if you're no longer able to go to your workplace, and you've got a little bit more space and a bit more time, then looking within, introspection, is such a valuable habit to be built into your life, not just during an emergency like this, but on an ongoing basis. Because when you don't give yourself that opportunity, It can lead on to, as I say, it could be a heart attack. You know, it just gets too much for your heart. It can be a stroke. It could be the collapse of the immune system. There's a variety of consequences in your body when negativity outstrips your ability to cope with it. And so it's a kind of mental hygiene that you look inside regularly and see what's going on. One of the habits that I've found very helpful, well, two in a day, as a regular student with the Brahma Kumaris, there are two things that I've found really helpful over the years that I developed the habit of doing quite early on. One is early morning meditation when the brain is fresh and I sort of have a period of spiritual study and I've had a night's sleep, and so I have some spiritual study that reminds me of the very positive elements of this philosophy. And then I may have some quiet enjoyment in meditation, hopefully making that connection with the divine. That is like a spiritual breakfast. And that in itself is protective during the day. But then at the end of the day too, to look back, to not just to sort of crash out, but get into the habit of spending at least a few minutes at the end of the day to think, well, how did it go? You know, I really moved a bit like an automaton during most of it, but it wasn't too bad. Or maybe there was some incident where you really allowed something to get to you and you said something that you regret. And then you look at that instead of just sort of suppressing the idea and pushing it away, but as Srinidhi was emphasizing, to monitor what is happening, deal with it, and then have a good night's sleep again. So these habits of nourishing yourself at the beginning of the day and finishing negativities at the end of the day are both in themselves very helpful. I'm not sure if I've answered your question overall, but those are two angles on it at any rate.
I think Aman will take a good look at that, and Aman should see if that works for one's personal benefit about what one should do about negative thinking. And I believe just by starting to do these things slowly, we can actually try looking for a change. And if that doesn't work for you, then probably we could do something else. Aman already writes, thank you for your advice, Neville. So that is our response for it. I think one of the questions that Aman also asks, and other people are also asking at the moment, is how to focus and stay in the present moment and not worry about tomorrow or the future. And thank you for your amazing answers. It is amazing to listening to you is also the feedback that Aman shares with us. I believe this is not a question just for Aman. Many people have been asking these questions over the past few days, where people have asked that when this lockdown will get over, when will things get back to normal or the way things they were. The common answer that we have always received is try living in the present moment. And what Aman asked is about how do we do that? How do we stay focused at the present moment?
I think it has to do with an awakening, really. I think many of us are sort of sleepwalk through life, quite honestly. Of course, we think we're awake, we have things happen, but I think it's really quite easy. I don't know if it's true in India in the same way as here in the UK and Europe, but especially here, you know, you can get so caught up with the everyday business of living, of earning a living, of family, of, you know, creating a home for your family. And then there's grandchildren, and then there's elderly parents to be looked after, and all of these things. And it's fine. This is life. But it is all so much more rich and enjoyable if we do all of these things and yet at the same time learn how to take our minds to the one beyond. And it's, Eckhart Tolle wrote a fine book called The Power of Now, in which he gives a lot of advice in that about coming into the present moment and how it's one of the things, because you're sort of moving with the river, sort of moment by moment, it's like a finger just moving with the river when you're really in the now. And so you're not resisting. You're not creating ripples. Your finger is just moving with the flow. That's the benefit of it. But in answer to your question of really living it and how to be like that, I feel it requires actually a lot of wisdom. It requires a sort of wider context so that you're able to put your mind at rest, if you like. That's where another aspect of the teachings of the Spiritual University that I found immeasurably valuable, even though I found it very hard to believe at first, because so being so steeped in this materialistic scientific view of the world that everything starts with a big bang as a sort of long line of billions of years of development of the universe and chance events eventually leading to us. And an idea that, we're sort of the peak of evolution that and that we may go on and colonize the stars. You know, this is the way science sort of holds out this dream. But actually, the picture that I've been given through the spiritual understanding that came through the Brahma Kumaris is very different. It says that there's a wheel of time. Well, of course, now that's more familiar, I know, in the East, that time is cyclical rather than just a line. But the Brahma Kumaris have a very interesting angle on this. They say this wheel of time begins with a state of perfection. Nature doesn't actually create us with all the flaws and defects and vices and addictions that we find ourselves with today. Nature doesn't do that. Nature wants to put in place a perfect world. And it does, to begin with. That the beginning of time is actually an age of truth. The famous golden age of Indian tradition. So that actually, to begin with, when I heard about that, it seemed like a bit of a fairy story. I remember when a sister was taking me through this idea, and she said, it starts out like that, but through time, we take many births, many incarnations, and so gradually we lose that clarity and beauty and truth that we start our journey with. And so the mistakes build up and we eventually lose our sense of connection with the divine. We forget that we're souls, we're spirit. We think of ourselves just as being bodies, and we get all the hurts of life that come with that over-identification with matter, with the body, with relatives, with positions and possessions and all the rest of it. All of which are the beauty of life, but when that we think that's all we are, they hurt so much when we lose them, or even when we're threatened with losing them. So you can't just simply come into, you can't shed all of those very easily. It's a big effort to sustain the power of now without this wider context. But the wider context has allowed me to really, I use that. So, for example, if there's some, I'd say I've let myself down in some way and some old character defect came out and I got angry with someone and I really don't like that. You know, I don't like having let myself down like that. But then I'll remind myself, well, look, Neville, there's no point in beating yourself up. That's not the attitude that God has toward his children. He is like the best possible coach. He's totally positive in his approach with us. He just wants to lift us up. So he says, look, you made that mistake because you're at the end of this journey. You've been on this long journey through time, and these these flaws have developed inside your character, but that's okay. That's part of the play. But now connect your mind to me, because we're actually approaching a time where we're going to go back to that beginning in this never-ending wheel of time. And I found that, as I say, to begin with, it seemed like a bit of a fairy story, even though my heart sort of resonated with it. But the more I've studied both frontier science and how what science is telling us about consciousness and how it actually puts in place this material world, the frontiers of science, that understanding is there. So the whole picture has fallen together for me. And so now, with that wider context, it becomes much easier to deal with these things. So two things. One, yes, you make the effort. If you just make that effort with your concentration to put aside your worries, just come into the present moment, but it's not, and it will help, but I agree with you, it's not easy to sustain. But the study, the spiritual study of this wider context, if that falls into place, it really makes it much easier to live in this present moment, because you accept things as they are, but you know that they will also get better.
It's a good thing to tell ourselves, saying that, okay, this is something that gets better with time. And also, like you mentioned about the spiritual study aspect of it, which is something that people have to pay attention on. And the more we focus and the more we practice, it becomes easier. And like you said, it is not easy. It requires a lot of effort. And once we are ready to put in that kind of effort, it slowly builds us upon. The next question, Neville, comes again. Sorry for the interruption. Please continue.
No. I was just going to say, it is ultimately very simple. It really is a matter of just a knack. You know, you come into that beautiful self-awareness. You are that beautiful energy. You are. There's no question about it. But, you know, we have to clear away the other stuff that gets in the way of that now moment. Sorry.
Neville, when you were speaking about this, you said something about looking within. And one of our friends, Emmy Ellis, on Facebook asks this question. And the question is, looking within, how? I see and I feel my physical problems that don't permit me to move, to walk. So how do I really look within? How do I see inside is the question that Emmy Ellis has for us.
If you, it's to do with the mind, and normally many of us in today's world, which has become very materialistic in its focus, we identify with the brain and the body. And actually, brain scientists were astonished to find that the brain is plastic. Because of this idea that the brain is who we are, they couldn't understand the brain really changes according to how you use it. So they call this phenomenon neuroplasticity. And the more you use your brain in a particular way, the more it wires itself up to favor that way of being used. But if you make this vital step of disidentifying with all of the brain circuitry and the memories that you've been given by your upbringing, by your family, by your schooling, if you disidentify with that from time to time and just understand that that is something that is a part of your everyday existence, but it's not the ultimate you. It's like a temporary filter that allows you to manage life, but it's not the deep, beautiful consciousness that is the ultimate you. It's when you get that, when you kind of get that idea that you're not your brain. It's good news that you're not your brain, because if you understand that, then you're able to change your brain. But as long as you identify with your brain, with your worries, with your circumstances, as long as you identify with those things outside of you, you can't change them. But if you sort of, by this expression, going within, I mean to let your mind understand itself as something distinct from the brain. So the brain has all of these circuits, and scientists are still absolutely puzzled by how the brain circuitry gives rise to our consciousness, how it gives rise to the beauty of life, how it gives rise to our sense of even colors and the beauty of music. They just don't get it because they're thinking of you as being a product of your brain. But if you understand that actually you are you in terms of this individuated consciousness, you know, that everything is consciousness really, and then consciousness works through the material realm. If you make that shift in understanding, you get the knack of separating from your brain and its conditioning, and you can start to take charge of your thoughts much more easily. This is power. This is what is meant by going within. It's like an introspection, but I agree, if you don't have the light of understanding of the soul or that individuated consciousness that you are, then what does it mean? But if you can grasp that or practice that or experience it by, you know, through meditation guides, because there are some very, very good yogis, especially in India, who can help with these sort of things. If you can catch that you're not your brain, you're not your body, then going within means identifying with that aspect of you that is not the brain and the body, but is the soul. And when you can do that, you have the power to change. It's so good, so empowering.
Thank you so much. Many of our friends are sharing their feedbacks about what they feel after listening to you, Neville, and the feedbacks are there on the screen for our friends to read. I believe it's already almost 52 minutes, and I think we can take one last question for today. And even though there are so many questions that we would still want to ask, I would apologize to my friends that I would not be asking all of those questions today. Sorry. But I'll try to take these questions for tomorrow. But nonetheless, I have one last question to ask, Neville. Pamela asks this question from YouTube, and she says, Om Shanti, sir, what is the role of a child or a teenager at the moment when he or she observes an ongoing strong conflict between his or her parents? Most of the times, I think the question is clear enough, but I would still want to put it into perspective of many young teenagers. When they see parents having a conflict, they do not know whether they are to side with one of the parents or they are just to stand there as a neutral party. They don't know what to do.
It's very difficult, isn't it? Yeah. I think one of the I touched on this in answer to an earlier question, that acceptance is a very powerful help. Just to accept that at the moment, these souls, these parents, have issues, they've run into difficulties in the relationship. It is distressing to see. We all wish that those close to us should be living harmoniously. But if there can be that acceptance that this is the situation, that in itself then stops it, or at least it helps to stop it from draining you of strength. If you feel a lot of resentment, resistance, anger about your parents being like this, then, you know, it's going to weaken you. But if you acknowledge, and the kind of scenario that I was painting earlier about how in the wheel of time, we are in a time now where these complications of karma and relationships and a sort of spiritual entropy, that the world is in the grip of this. This is the nature of today's world. It's very widespread. So a non-judgmental attitude of acceptance that this is the situation, that helps to protect you, actually. And you protecting your strength in these circumstances is the best way of maintaining freedom from the influence of either of the parents in an undue way. You know, they might want to turn you towards them and against the other, but you'll be able to see more clearly the reality of the situation if you have this acceptance and non-judgmental attitude towards it. But many sympathies for living in such circumstances. It's a tough one.
I agree. Thank you, Neville. I guess that sums it up all, saying that we understand that we are all in this time and everybody has a role to play. And if we understand that with a wholehearted acceptance, there is so much that we can learn. And one of our friends, Harish Shah, has a feedback for us, and he writes to us from YouTube, and he says, during meditation, there are no thoughts, however, no connection with God, only no thinking meditation, but we have not yet more than half an hour and darkness and light shown. This is a question related to meditation. I believe that it is also time for meditation. Like at the end of the show, we all meditate for a few minutes. And since you are our master of meditation today and you have experienced meditation for so many years, Neville, I would request you to lead us through a meditation. But before I do that, I would like to thank all of our friends for writing in to us. And many of them are sharing feedbacks as well. Lisa says, from Facebook, "You are so peaceful, sir. I can feel the peace coming from you." Thank you, Lisa, for such a wonderful feedback. Prem Kumar Sashi says, thank you so much. Thank you, Prem. I believe there are so many feedbacks that if I start reading all of them, it'll take another half an hour or so. So our friends can read those feedbacks and thank you messages on the screen. Thank you to all of you for joining us today. And thank you for all the lovely questions that you put us through. And on all of your behalf, I would like to thank Neville, who has joined us all the way from the UK. Thank you, Neville, for coming in and giving those insights to us.
Thank you, Srinidhi. With these modern technologies, all the way from the UK is like speaking from next door, isn't it? It's rather amazing. But thank you for organizing this. I think you and Rohit Bhai, who I was dealing with on the technical side earlier, it's great that you're making this effort. But a special thanks to those who have been listening and asking such honest and open questions and having the patience to let me share something from these goodies that have come my way over these years, thanks to meeting these yogis from India. So I'll just say a few of the kind of thoughts that I find help to take me into that state we call yoga, this spiritual yoga, not a positioning of the body, but of the mind. Because the soul is this positive energy, it's almost as if any positive feeling that I choose will help to take me into soul consciousness. So, for example, when I think of the beauty of the openness and generosity of spirit of those teachers who came from India to carry these ideas here to London and across the world, my heart fills with gratitude. And when I think of the fact that there may be some hundreds of souls listening and receiving those benefits that came from that source through those yogis, that fills my heart with a sense of wonder. Whether it's gratitude, wonder, counting your blessings, ancient wisdom like that, just a feeling and an emotion of fullness is what puts you into the wavelength whereby the soul is connecting both to its own original truth and to that one beyond. Disturbance is like interference in a radio program. When you're disturbed, when you allow worries and fears to disturb your mind, it cuts you off from that broadcast. So, even briefly now, let's just experience, let's just make a choice for deep peace, for the beauty of the inner being, for the vibrations of peace and love with which I connect to the divine. So that I, the soul, occupying this body, fill with that energy of truth. Charge the battery of my well-being. I love. I feel the companionship of that one. And if I can hold on to that, keep that one with me, learn how to move through life, never far away from that feeling of connectedness, I will change, and I will change the world.